Yes, indeed. Class is back in session, and our special guest today on Musings on Golf is looking to produce yet another year of high marks for the men's golf program at the University of Illinois, his alma mater. Along with our executive producer, Jenna Self, I am Kelly Elbin. Folks, I'll admit, math was never my strong suit, but it is not in any way, shape, or form difficult to add up the amazing numbers associated with PGA of America professional Mike Small, who begins his 26th year at the helm at the University of Illinois in Champaign. In addition to hearing from Coach Small, we will also peer into our crystal ball to see who we think Keegan Bradley will select with his six captain's picks on Wednesday. We are recording this on Tuesday, August 26th, so that tomorrow is a big, big day for the Ryder Cup. We'll also offer a few thoughts on Tommy Fleetwood finally getting his first win on the PGA Tour, and what a massive win it was for Tommy. I got to know Mike Small during my days as Director of Communications for the PGA of America. Terrific player. I mean, Mike Small has won what initially was called, and was called for a long time, the PGA Club Professional Championship. It's now known as the PGA Professional Championship, with today the low 20 finishers in that event advancing on to play in the PGA Championship, one of the four majors in golf. Great player. Mike always struck me as a very focused guy, very disciplined guy. At the same time, very accommodating and very authentic. Maybe it was his Midwest roots. I mean, he grew up in that area and went to school there, played on a Big Ten championship team at Illinois along with Steve Stricker. And I think all of those attributes, the focus, the discipline, the hard work, but also very authentic. I think they've all served him extremely well in his first 25 years at the helm at the University of Illinois. How about these for a few numbers? 13 of the last 16 Big Ten championship titles have been claimed by the University of Illinois, including 8 straight from 2015 to 2023. I'm not sure. Maybe you all might know of a better streak out there, but this is incredible, for particularly for a program in a cold weather climate. I mean, come on, how many cold weather climate programs are doing what he's done? Well, he's produced 2 NCAA individual champions in Scott Langley and Thomas Peters. Peters currently plays on the LIV Tour. He also has Thomas Dietrich, who plays on the PGA Tour. And while the number 13 can be unlucky for some, it certainly is not for Coach Small. He's been the Big Ten Coach of the Year a conference record 13 times. I mentioned about him being close with Stricker. They've maintained a very, very warm relationship over the years. And he talks about that. He talks really a lot about the challenge that he undertook in growing that program. And you'll find out, I asked him, I said, you know, Mike, would you have taken that job? It wasn't your alma mater. And you'll find out what he has to say. He continues to be a really good player. Now, this is an unusual situation of strength as a player and a big-time player and a big-time college golf coach. You just don't find this combination. He has he's played in 3 senior U.S. senior opens since he advanced over 50, made the cut in 15 of 34 PGA Tour events since he started coaching at Illinois. So that's an easy thing to do. He's played in 13 major championships, member of the Illinois Golf Hall of Fame. It truly, for Coach Mike Small, goes on and on, but enough for me. Let's hear what I thought was a terrific interview I conducted last week with Coach Small. I have a lot of respect and admiration for him, and I think you're going to come away with a lot of the same feelings after you hear from Illinois men's golf coach Mike Small following these messages from our partners, Titleist and William & Harry. America, this is your moment. William & Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here to honor the Ryder Cup so every fan can feel like part of Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. 2 head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% water resistant with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Just so you know, there's a limited run on these shoes, so don't sit this one out. pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit, get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with the wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
College and university students are heading back to campus for the start of another school year. And for our special guest today, that means gearing up for his 26th season as the men's head golf coach at his alma mater, the University of Illinois, where he has achieved unmatched success. He's been named Big Ten Conference Coach of the Year, a conference record 13 times. His teams have won 13 of the last 16 Big Ten championship titles and have advanced to the NCAA championship 16 of the last 17 years. Oh, and let's not forget that as a player himself, he has captured the PGA Professional Championship, once known as the PGA Club Professional Championship, three times and has competed in 13 major golf championships. That's a mouthful, folks. So much to cover with my old friend, Mike Small. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm great, Kelly. It's great to catch up with you. You look great, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot to cover, obviously, but let's kind of get to, first of all, Coach, you've got a new season, and I know you're excited, and there's so much work that goes into every recruiting and putting together a team. How do you feel about this team, this Illini team, as you head into the 25-26 season?
Well, I'm excited about it. I'm excited every year at this time. You spend all summer recruiting, working on players for the future, yet in the back of your mind, you know, the exciting time is coaching the players you have. And you try to explain that to the recruits when you're out there recruiting them that, you know, this is awesome to be here, but if you come to school at Illinois, it's going to be more fun. And that's what these guys have when they come back this fall. And we start in a couple weeks and excited about it.
Yeah, your first event is an event, I think, that you host, isn't it?
Yeah, Olympia Fields. We've hosted that for a number of years now, and it's a preeminent, one of the premier events in college golf, and it's in the fall, in the middle of September. This year, I think it's third. It's always a third weekend in September, and yeah. The field is consistently strong on top two or three top fields in college golf, and the golf course obviously is unmatched and at this level, and it's hosted majors, it's hosted FedEx Cup playoffs on the PGA Tour, and when you combine the best players in college golf with a venue like that, with a membership that embraces you and wants you to come, it's a pretty special week.
Yeah, I bet. And that last part is important, isn't it, to be able to continue to go back to a great place like Olympia Fields, right? The membership, that buy-in.
Oh, it's huge. The golf course is phenomenal. We all know about that. But, you know, college golf, it captured a lot of people's attentions and it brings back memories of them maybe in college. And anytime a college tournament can be played at a course and a venue that welcomes you, that's not always the case, Kelly, to be honest with you. It's not always the case. But to have a membership 100% on board and bringing the teams in and giving them a great week, a welcome to week on a fabulous golf course is something that all college golf coaches look for.
Yeah, I bet. Hey, Mike, you grew up in a very athletic family, right?
I did. Sports has been a big part of my life ever since I can remember.
Yeah. Your dad, talk a little bit about your dad and your brother, in addition to all of your accomplishments, please.
Yeah. Well, my dad played basketball at Illinois, was an all Big Ten performer, played on a Big Ten championship team and, had a lot of success in college. And then I grew up an Illinois fan and I always went to the games and wasn't too far away from campus, but my dad being a former athlete, there was always a connection there. And then obviously when I had a chance to go play college golf, that played a big part in my decision. And then my brother, who's 3 years younger than me, followed and he played baseball at Illinois. So we all played on Big Ten championship teams and all had success. And it's something fun we share together.
I know you played basketball at a high level in high school, but golf obviously became your priority, your ambition, your dream. When did that
Right.
become that way, Mike? When did you sort of have it in your mind that, okay, golf is where I'm going down the path and eventually become professional?
Well, I didn't know I was going to turn professional probably until I had started having really some success in college. I didn't really look that far in advance. Junior golf and college golf was different back in the day. We didn't really look, it wasn't such a small world. It was a big mythical place out way beyond college. So we didn't think much about professional golf. And in high school, I loved basketball. I was decent. You're always thinking maybe this would be something fun to do, but golf was always my love, my attraction in the summer times. And I loved being at the golf course. I loved learning something new and being around a competitive atmosphere nearly every day all year. And it was something that I enjoyed being by myself. Although I liked playing with other people, I mean, I liked working on it myself. I didn't need somebody else to do it with me, which was always kind of I didn't really think of it and consciously think this is cool. I can do it by myself, but I seemed to get a lot done when I was by myself, and I could see some improvement. And then when I went to Illinois, I was a decent player as a freshman and a sophomore, but I got better. I improved a lot. I got a lot of help from my PGA pro back in Danville, Illinois. Neil Moore was a big influence on me at that time. And then obviously playing with some good teammates, Steve Stricker was my teammate in Illinois. And I tell people to this day that if I hadn't played golf with Steve Stricker in college, I never would have played the PGA Tour because I learned what good golf was every day, and I learned what level you had to be at. So you put all that stuff together, a sport you love, an athletic background, a school that I really enjoyed being at with good teammates and some good instruction. I got better. And my senior year, I won a couple times and had some success. And then, I thought, hey, maybe I can do this for a living.
Talk about Mr. Stricker for a minute. Obviously, you guys go way back. I'm sure you've stayed good friends through the years. Any good Steve Stricker story, or even something, Mike, where you realized, wow, this guy's at the collegiate level. This guy's really good. This guy is maybe at a level that's going to take him a little bit farther than a lot of other players.
Yeah, that's what sticks out to me the most. I mean, Steve and I have been really, really good friends for a long time, shared a lot of great times in college on the PGA Tour as well. Obviously, his career's been a lot more fruitful and longer than mine was on the PGA Tour, but you could see that happening in college. When he showed up at school a year younger than me, he wasn't as dynamic of a ball striker and this guy that just bombs it out there, but you could tell the confidence he had, the presence he had, and the ability to control his golf ball. And the way he putted and chipped the golf ball was really eye-opening to me. He could hit it far. He didn't really hit a driver very well when he came to school as a freshman, but he developed that and got better. But he wins the Big Ten championship as a freshman. So he's one of those players that looked good, sounded good, had a good presence about himself, but it wasn't overwhelming like, man, this guy's all world. But he knew how to win. He knew himself. He was very competitive. He didn't throw shots away. He could putt so well, and he just scored the golf ball, which was eye-opening to me as a young player. Why is he better? His scores are better, but why? And sure, he was better in a lot of ways, but he was just very efficient and he knew his own game.
Yeah, Mike, it's fascinating the way you put that in terms of Strix being able to win. We've seen recently in the likes of, not the likes of, but we've seen recently with Tommy Fleetwood that he, for whatever reason, hasn't been able to close it out on the PGA Tour. Been close, right? Is it, coach, what is it with at that level in terms of is it a mental thing? Is it maybe the ball bouncing the right way? What's the difference that you see between a Steve Stricker, let's say, and a Tommy Fleetwood?
That's a great question. That's something that every professional searches for. And I think you find the answer within yourself. There's so many variables in golf that you can't control. You can't control the bounces. You can't control the conditions. You can't control your opponent. Sometimes you can play great and you just get beat. Happens that way in match play quite a bit, but in stroke play, it's just as well. But you need to control your space. On our team, we talk about controlling your space. And that's the 6 inches or 8 inches around your entire body that nobody really can get into. And if you can control that physically and mentally, emotionally, your chances of winning go up and they get more, they increase. Guys like Strick, and to, we were talking about, and even other players that win a lot, they learn how to handle their emotions. They learn how to stay in the present. They don't let all these exterior forces breaks, good and bad, or conditions or whatever, get in their psyche, get in their head, and they continue to play. And they actually, things slow down, and they actually get better when the pressure mounts. And it's something you have to learn. I think everybody can do it, but it takes some learning. It takes some getting beat. It takes some perseverance and some discipline to understand that. But, you know, players that can do it younger, I think, have played sports in the past and played other sports. And, you know, things, you don't turn your brain off, but you turn your brain off. You're still engaged in what's going on. Things happen slowly, but you don't sit and overthink things, and you trust yourself. And, you know, it's something that, like I said, it's, I never want to judge somebody in golf, whether they can win or lose all the time. It's so fleeting. But if putting yourself in position to win, I think more times than other people, is almost as big a compliment as anything, because winning is so hard.
And then when you get in that position, that old term about, you know, blocking out the noise, everything else is sort of noise. Is that a fair way to put it, Mike?
Yes.
Everything has just got to be that moment, that time, focusing on what matters.
100%. And I think a lot of that comes out of confidence. It comes out of a positive self-image, not worrying about the future, not second-guessing yourself. I find myself, the older I get in competition, for my mind to be more active. You think the older I get, I would be better at it. But I've won a few times in my life, and I've been in some pressure situations and responded very well. And it's something that I'm very proud of. But you have to keep doing it. And if you do it often and you prepare, then the chances get better and better. But if you don't do it for a while and you're out of the game and you don't play as many tournaments, you kind of lose that edge. Again, I think that's why pre-shot routine and your routines you go through, your positive self-talk, are so huge. But winning's hard. And in golf, 156 guys start a week in a full field, and there's one winner.
So pleased to be joined by PGA of America professional Mike Small, who begins his 26th year as the head men's golf coach at the University of Illinois. So Illinois gets cold, right? It gets cold. I lived in the Detroit area for about 7 years, so I understand when cold sets in and stays for a while. Mike, how did you go about not being in Texas, not being in Arizona, not being in California, in building program at where you played into such a national power? How do you do that? How did you do it?
I tell you what, Kelly, that first statement you made sound like you were recruiting against me. That's why I hear that a lot. No, it is what it is. I mean, you talked about winning a minute ago, and everything in life is a mindset. Everything. And I believe that more important than where you're located, more important than what's going on around, you know, the weather you're at, is who you surround yourself with. What energy, what vibe, what you know, what tutelage, that's more important than the weather. Now, weather can be important to some people, but I think that's a little superficial at times. Now, if it's snowing and raining all year round, that's different. But there's very few places in the United States of America that are perfect weather every day. I mean, but Palm Springs, Arizona, maybe, and some parts of that, and then South Florida. But besides that, even the Sun Belt, it gets in the 30s and 40s and 50s and gets cold. And nowhere's perfect. But I look at this as a challenge, too. There's so many tour players and so many guys on tour have won growing up in the North, going to college in the North, in the Midwest. And learning how to play. It's something that you don't need to play golf every day to be great. You need balance in your life. Now, that being said, the weather is not a hindrance for our program at all, evidenced by our results. And people say, well, the weather's bad there. You know, what? I can't, you know, how does it affect you? Well, if it affected us that poorly, would our record be what it is for the last 15 or 20 years? I mean, we've been to the match play portion, I think, the most of any school in the country, which is the final eight. We've had all these All-Americans, national champions, tour players. That wouldn't happen if the weather was that detrimental. Now, when you get past that, you have to understand, yes, there are times of the year when it snows and it's cold, but we have facilities that contradict that obviously help us get in and practice. But we're gone for 5 weeks in the winter. We're gone from school from a semester break. We're playing and practicing all spring and practice trips and training. By March 1st, we're generally outside and can get out and play some golf in our area. And school starts the end of January. So it's not as detrimental as you think. But I use the impression you brought up, and I use the theory of that as a motivation. if we're as good as we have been and the weather is an issue, that means something special is going on. And all we want is people to do, and to back to your point about how do you do this, all I want people to do is to take a closer look, come to campus, peek inside. And when people do that, when they see the facilities, they see the atmosphere, they touch it, they feel it, and they hear us talk and hear the energy, all that worry about the weather goes away. It really does, because you have plenty of time a year to play and practice. And our facilities, you know, 9 bays for 9 men, you know, 40-yard pitches inside, an outdoor center that rivals anywhere in the world. The facilities are there to get better. But when you hear the energy, you hear the plan that we have for each player, and how we complement each player within the program, I think where you're located drops down the list of prerequisites to play golf. And I'm thankful that the players that have come to Illinois and seen that, and been a part of it, and have taken the step toward. We've had kids come play for us from Arizona, from Florida, from California, from Georgia, from Australia, all over the world, warm weather places, because they see the value in a culture. And I think even for a job, if you love what you do and you're on people that get you excited, and it's a great way to have a living, who cares where you're located? It's something that that those people like.
Coach, you mentioned Australia, and obviously you recruited internationally. Thomas Peters in 2012 mm-hmm. won the individual NCAA championship. You also had Scott Langley in 2010, one of your guys win the NCAA individual championship. Talk about those two guys, if you would, in terms of what made them at the collegiate level, right? Mm-hmm. So good that they ended up being NCAA champions.
Well, that's a great question. We've had those two winners. We've had three runner ups. We've had a couple thirds. We've had a number of guys finish fourth in the country. So, the last 15, 20 years, I think we had lead in all those categories on the NCAA golf of most wins, most top twos, most top threes. Again, in Champaign, Illinois, who would have thunk it? And I think that goes back to what they're made of, their fabric of who they are. They understand that to get better, they have to put the time in. They have to be surrounded by the right energy, but they have to believe in themselves. And both those guys came in as probably not top recruits, but we thought they were top of our list, but they weren't like AJGA All-Americans or Junior Ryder Cuppers, but they had the potential to be good. And when you combine talent with purpose, kind of that's our program's all about. Everything we do has purpose to it. There's no wasted time, no wasted energy. And I think when they combine talent with purpose, good things happen, and then you just go and it builds. And Thomas won as a sophomore than NCAAs, and Scott won as a junior. So they both won as underclassmen, which shows that they had a lot of talent, and then sped their development up. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, two years ago, Max Herendeen finishes second in the nation as a freshman. So then you're getting its talent better, and the talent keeps getting better and better. The culture doesn't change. The way we coach doesn't change. Those guys had talent maybe above their years. People didn't notice it yet, but they're just flat out good.
Therefore, does the recruiting process, because you've had those successes and because of that, of the discipline and everything, does the recruiting process in a sense get a little easier for you because you had those successes with those guys and you were able to sell the program when people came, et cetera?
I think it's all relative. It's easier in a way. More people get notices and know that hey, this is a serious program. I can get better there. But then you still have to get past what we talked about earlier, the location. You have to get past those things like that. But I think it has. I think people know that we're a blue blood of college golf now. It just hasn't been a 3 or 4 year stretch. It's been a 15 or 20 year stretch of success. So I think that speaks more volumes than anything as a consistency behind it. Not a lot of surprises. You know, it's like if you go to a certain restaurant or you buy a certain product and it's been good for a long time, people believe in it more. So I think that's helped. But the recruiting process has gotten tougher because college coaches have gotten so much better, so much more dedicated and disciplined in their approach. It is a big time job now. Recruiting actually takes me more time than I ever did before, and my staff more time than ever did, just because the competition is out there and it's harder. And I think through social media, young junior golfers are expecting to be recruited harder than they ever were before, which, you know, is it the right place or it's not the right place? I don't think you want to recruit somebody so hard you convince them that's the right place when it may not be. I think that's a part of recruiting. I think it's been a part, big part for us, is that we haven't over recruited people, because I did it one time in my 25 years. I did such a good job of recruiting. I thought you had to be a recruiter and a salesman that you would convince the player to come when it probably wasn't the best place. And that would have been found out through a normal relationship building process. But when you try to put all the glitz and glamour and bells and whistles on, and it's, you know, these places do that, and then it's different when the kids show up, it's not a true relationship building process. It's not where they need to be. So there's a lot goes into recruiting, more than you'd ever think. But the whole key is to get the right kids in the right program that want to join, lock arms and join forces and see how good they can be. And if that happens and they match your program, it's a wonderful experience.
Oh, I bet it is. The locking arms, that's fantastic stuff. So, okay, let's take this just a little step further. If you would, maybe a typical, if there is one, Mike, a typical week of recruiting off season for you, what's it like? And then what's a typical week in season for you? And part of the question of the in season is, I'm sure all of your players have their own coaches back home. And I'm wondering, how do you coach them with all the success that you've had, and also be respectful of the coaches back home? So maybe coach, start with the off season, maybe a typical week of the recruiting process.
Oh, there's a lot there. We don't have enough time to go through all this stuff here, because it's pretty interesting stuff.
Just threw a lot at you, didn't I?
Yeah, but that's fine. The summer recruiting is very time intensive. The June 15th hits, you can start recruiting a class that is 2 years out. And the commitment process from these kids has gotten earlier and earlier and earlier. So those coaches have to be more aggressive and more confident in their decisions earlier and earlier and earlier. So when June 15 hits, you're on the phone, calling a lot of kids, fielding a lot of questions from kids, a lot of placement services, but a lot of the parents and the kids that you want to be interested in, you're building relationships, trying to find out where they stand and where they want to what their future holds. And you mentioned earlier about our program, it's easier to get these kids on the phone. So a lot more kids are getting on the phone than before. So it takes a lot more time. Recruiting is a very time intensive part of the job, not only watching the kids and watching and evaluate them and being on your, college coaches are on their feet from 6:30 in the morning until 7 o'clock at night at a golf course, walking continuously all day, trying to see as many players as we can and evaluate them during tournaments. Last couple of weeks ago, we were at the U.S. Junior and then the Junior PGA, and it's 195 degrees and you're on your feet for 12 or 13 hours at a time, trying to see as many players as you can see. And then the ones you like, they want to see you out there watching them at the same time, but there's not as much time to do it as you want to. So you do all that during the day, and then at night you're on the phone building relationships and calling coaches and calling parents and just trying to find a way to build that relationship. So it's a very time intensive, important part of getting to know all these different recruits. And then obviously you sign them at the November before they come to school. So there's a lot of time there to build that relationship. But again, kids are pushing the timeline up faster and faster, which puts coaches under more of a crunch.
Then in season, Mike, you have the tournaments. And I also mentioned about the coaching from your angle versus the coaching that they may have back home. How do you balance that, coach?
Well, I had the best job in the world. I had the best job in golf. I'm convinced of that. But it is, like I said, very time intensive. It's the longest sport in college athletics. We go from the first day of school in the fall to about November 1st. And then the first day of school in the spring, all the way till past school is done into June for the national championship. So we're with these kids a lot, and we travel a lot, and we recruit in between these times in the summer. And then we recruit during periods that we're allowed to in the winter. So it just goes and goes, and it's something that you have to have the right people around you to enjoy your job. Can you imagine doing this so much time with these kids and you don't really have a relationship with them? You don't really, quote unquote, like them or know them very well, how miserable that would be. So that's right. Why you have to really build a relationship with the families in the recruiting process. And then when they come to school, obviously get to know them better. But practice every day. We have 12 to 14 or 15 tournaments a year. It's a very transient position and job. You're on the road coaching your players. We have one home event a year, maybe schools do. So that's 12 or 13. You're on the road. Other sports have half their season where they're home and half when they're away. You're on the road 90% of the time. It's very busy. And coaching them, I coach more from a player's perspective than a coach's perspective, even though I'm a coach and I'm a teacher. I approach how I coach them by what I think is going on in their mind by me being a player. That's why all these years I've continued to play as I've been coaching has helped my coaching, because I can relate to the ups and downs and the difficulty of it and the emotions and things like that. So I coach every player differently. I coach them all fairly, but I coach them differently because they're all different personalities or different emotions or different families. They come from different instructors you talked about. So I could have 9 different kids having 9 different swing thoughts and 9 different ways they've been taught. It keeps you vibrant. It keeps you excited. It keeps you learning. And again, as a player, you can relate to these kids better. And your question about dealing with the coaches, I think that's awesome. They have coaches they work with, teachers they work with, instructors. In order to get us recognized by us, they've done something right. They've evolved their game to a level that can help us win a national championship. So I'm not a possessive coach where I say, okay, now you're my player, you listen to me. That's not the way I roll, because as a player, I understand that the way they're going to play their best is through a peaceful, quiet, confident, purposeful mind, not something that's clogged up in all this swing thoughts and force feeding people things. I don't believe in force feeding them. I think they need to understand that what you're saying is correct, and then they have some confidence in it, and then they ask for it. But I have relationships with all my players, teachers. I think that's important because everybody's different, and I need to learn what's going on with them behind the scenes, what they're working on, what kind of lingo they use, so that I can use that same stuff when I talk to them. So it's a very, again, I mean, I'm going every way, every different direction throughout the year, through all the responsibilities we have with the players and their development, recruiting and then their development. And then obviously coaches have to fundraise, and we have to, you know, be schedules and equipment and facilities. And there's a lot to do. And it's something that I think people look at college coaching from that, like it was 30 or 40 years ago, when you just kind of maybe just wasn't this intensive, but it is very intensive, very time consuming. And I think the players appreciate it, the parents appreciate it. And then when you get really good, it makes it all worthwhile.
So Mike, it's a night and day versus what you went through when you played in terms 100%. Of the commitment, the coaching, et cetera, right?
Yes, coaching was important back then, but it wasn't as close. It wasn't as intensive. There wasn't all these national junior events. It was more recruiting. It was more or less just taking people on your roster. Coaching has always been important. The relationship of mentoring people through things on the golf course and then in life as well. That's important. I got a lot of help that way through my coach in college. Not necessarily on the course, but off the course as well too.
Yeah,
so
right.
Just competitive ways to think about your life and time management. And but it's changed a lot. And again, the players are better. The golf world is a smaller place. Everybody's connected at every level. Coaches are getting paid a lot more money now. When you get paid a lot more money and they build you better facilities, expectations go up. When expectations go up and salaries go up, you have to work harder to keep your job. It's a different animal than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago.
I mean, it's such a good conversation with Illinois golf coach Mike Small, who's built the Illini into a tremendous force on the national level over his 25 plus years at the helm. Okay, coach, recruiting. Let me go two more areas, please. Well, you mentioned earlier Thomas Peters from Belgium. You also recruited Thomas Dietrich from Belgium. You have a young man from Australia on your team now. The game is very much and has been, Mike, for a long time, a global one. How do you, as the golf coach of Illinois, go about recruiting international players? What's that process?
Well, once you get to know them, it's the same as anything before. You build that relationship and you build trust and you understand and learn who they are and get to know their family. To that point, it's a little more difficult, obviously, because of where they're located. But a lot of these top juniors come to America in the winter months and play. That's where I noticed Thomas Peters and Thomas Dietrich and Adrien Dumont Deschassard, who's from Belgium as well, who played the PGA Tour, who's doing well on the Korn Ferry. He's Korn Ferry Tour Player of the Year 2 years ago. So I've had a number of players. I've had a great domestic and American players, too, have gone on and won on the PGA Tour. Two of them won this year in the PGA Tour, Brian Campbell and Nick Hardy. I mean, and Thomas Dietrich, but Nick Hardy won a couple years ago. So I don't like to maybe say international versus national. Once you get to know them, they're treated the same. But getting your eyes on an international player is more difficult. And again, playing has been important to me. It's been a niche of our program. It separated us from different programs. I played in, I think, 10 majors since I've been coaching and 35 PGA Tour events since I've been coaching. I've elected to do that and grow my coaching and my game through playing and necessarily not traveling the world looking for players and just beating the bushes overseas for players. So when international players have success, then obviously we build that relationship and I see them play in the U.S. Now, if I have to go overseas, I really have to, I will. But like I mentioned a little throughout this talk, there's not a lot of time left to do a lot of stuff. You got to pick and choose your poison.
Well, you have to be a very disciplined person. You strike me by nature. You're a very disciplined person, which in your profession, you have to be. You've mentioned the word time many times in this conversation, right? You know how to allocate your time on a daily basis, correct?
I think you're right. And I think the older I get, the more I learn to appreciate time. When I first started coaching, I just lost my card on the PGA Tour. I had a loving wife at home who was running ragged with two boys under the age of five. I was still playing. When you're young, you have all that youthful energy. You don't really think of it. You just go. You just go, 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 go. And I did it. We built this thing and it's been an awesome run. But the older you get, maybe you stop and think, man, you know, you just can't keep going all the time. You got to manage yourself. You got to manage your personal life. You got to manage your own time. And I think maybe that's why it's come up a little more in this conversation, because the older I get, I'm still 100% in. I'm still grinding on the job. But it's amazing how when you get older, I think you're not a bull in a china closet as much. You're actually trying to strategize your time a little better.
So your success as a player clearly has benefited you. It's benefited the program in Illinois. Coach, how and back in my prior life when I was with the PGA of America, I was fortunate to sit next to you a few times at the PGA mm-hmm. Championship when you had won the what was then the National Club Professional Championship, and that had gotten you on to one of your or a couple of your 10 PGA championships and 3 US Opens. What was that like for that period of time to balance the efforts to be a really good player, Mike, with being a big time collegiate coach?
I get asked that a lot by my assistant coaches. I've had some great assistants throughout the years, and they've all gone on to get head jobs, and they've gone on to do good things in the game of golf. And my current assistants, we're talking, you know, it's like, I look back, I don't even know how I did it, Kelly. I just did it. It's something that I wanted to do. I wanted to build a winner. Being the coach of Illinois was a big deal to me. But I also wanted to play, and I had to make some extra money playing too back in the day, because you know coaches didn't take jobs, college golf coach jobs, to make a living before. You did it because it was a way of life, a lifestyle. You enjoyed it. You were competitive, so I just went and did it. And but I needed the money, and I made more money playing, I think, in my career almost than I have my coaching job, because I've been successful at it. But when I played the PGA Tour, I won twice on the Korn Ferry Tour, which was the Nike Tour at the time. Got on the tour. I was a decent player. I was one of those guys that was projected to be on tour for a long time. I lost my card in the first year. It's like, what do I do? Illinois came calling a couple times. I said, well, I was kind of getting burnt out. Let's just try this. And I did it. And I was all in. As a matter of fact, I turned down 20 out of 21 Nike Tour starts the year I first started coaching. To go coach. So I knew I chose the right reason why I turned down all these starts, because my number got reshuffled up. I had a top 10 or in there or something. And so I started coaching, and it's something that I wanted to do, but I needed to play once I got the place settled in. But they fed off each other. And I think I practiced so much when I was on tour and growing up that it carried me for the number of 5 or 10 years I worked and coached. I didn't have to practice as much because I practiced so much before. And then I think back to the thing about when the older we get and the more wisdom we have, we understand our lives. I think my game got better when I wasn't my golf game day, night, 24 hours a day, seven days a week. I had other things to do. I had my job, I had my family, and then I played some golf. And my golf game actually got better. So I think, again, to the experiences I've had over my life as a coach and a player, I can relate to my players. You don't need to practice every day, all day, and obsess with the game. You need balance in your life. You will play better if you can take some confidence away from practice every day, even though you're not there for 8 hours, and bring back some confidence and have some balance. And maybe that's why I played better. And I've had better finishes on the PGA Tour and majors since I've been coaching than I did when I played full time, because I think of that balance in my life.
Yeah, you made the cut. The numbers I saw, you made the cut in 15 of 34 or 35 PGA Tour events. I mean, you had
since
some,
I was coaching,
a lot of,
yeah.
Since coaching, you've had a lot of success there. That balance, that it sounds almost to me as well, Mike, of perspective you've given yourself to see that it isn't just a narrow focus, that you have other things going on, and that's okay. You can still be good as a player, correct?
I think you're right. And I think that's, you see these guys on the PGA Tour have these long careers. I think they learned how to handle that. Obviously, yeah, they're flat out good. You got to be good, right, but you got to have the talent, but they've learned how to balance that. And that's what longevity is. And that's what consistency is. So I'd like to think that my game has been consistent for 30 years. I continue to play. I made the playoffs and the Champions Tour a few years ago in four events. I had three top 10s. I'd like to think that success, that consistency comes out of the way you manage your time and your balance, your life, and also your grit and determination. And when you're there someplace, when you're doing something at some point, you're all in on that, but you're not there all the time, but just because you go to something different, and then you focus on that 110%. And then you move, then you go to your family. When you're with your family, yeah, you're with your family. When you're recruiting, you're recruiting. When you're playing, you're playing. It's hard to do, but if you can figure that out in life, in everyday life, normal people have normal jobs and stress in their lives, that they can kind of compartmentalize what they're doing. It's amazing what you can do in each one of those compartments if you're focused in each one of those.
A few more questions for our good friend Mike Small, the men's golf coach at the University of Illinois, before we let him go. He's finding a new place in South Florida, at least for a period of time, and trying to get settled in there. So we're giving him, or letting him, or thanking him very much for joining us. Coach, name, image, and likeness and the transfer portal have been absolute game changers. And certainly for sports fans, Mike, they recognize it at the football, with collegiate football and basketball. But it impacts golf as well. And I'm wondering, how has that been for you in handling the portal, kids leaving? If I may sort of just frame it very quickly, back around Thanksgiving last year, we had on Noah Kent, who at that time had just come off being the runner-up at the U.S. Amateur, had was at the University of Iowa, and his dad, David, PGA of America professional, kind of a Thanksgiving theme. And it was a really nice conversation. Well, 2 months later, Noah had left Iowa and had transferred to the University of Florida. I don't know all the circumstances, but these rapid changes, Mike, have to present challenges for any men's golf coach, I would think.
I think they do. For us personally, we haven't had the exodus that some of the programs have had. And I think that goes to maybe our culture, and it goes to the support of our players and the education they get at Illinois. We haven't had that side of the equation. Now, we have brought some players in through the portal. So there's a new opportunity for us to do that. I think the NIL is fine. I think I'm all for people making a living. And if people have the ability to make money, this is America. They should do that. I've never, nothing against NIL. And I think NIL has a place in college golf. But when NIL is combined, and it ironically came at the same point as the transfer portal, as the ability to transfer unattached, unabridged, just go whenever you want and leave. I think that's what's really affected college athletics in the football and basketball space, is that now people are leaving, not because they're unhappy somewhere or they're somewhere better. It's because there's more money. So when you combine the money with the transfer, that's where the problem has begun, is where they're both at the same time. I think if the transfer without sitting out a year was by itself and NIL didn't exist, or if NIL was by itself and the transfer, you had to sit and have a year of residence before you could play, was still there, I think we wouldn't be having these issues. But I think all this has happened because both have come at the same point in time. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Does, yeah. And I think that I hadn't really heard it put that way, but it does make sense, right? You certainly have the Wild West in the portal, and then yes, the incredibly changing dynamics with the dollars that are available for kids, right?
They're both positive, but they feed off each other together the wrong way. And that's the problem. If one was by itself, I think they'd both be fine. They both have a purpose and they both make a lot of sense. But combined, it's causing a lot of problems in college athletics.
Two final questions for you, Coach. One, Is there a moment that has for you as the coach at the University of Illinois, whether it was your first NCAA championship, whatever, that stands out to you that, wow, this was maybe the coolest part of me being a coach? Or is it more of a collective thing?
I tell people all the time, when I first took the job at Illinois, we weren't very competitive. We were 10th in the Big Ten, outside the top 100. I wanted to build something. I was eager to get this thing going. The first year I was there, it wasn't very good. We were still poor. You know, we didn't, the team, I spent all year trying to get the culture changed, and our roster sizes diminished because guys just couldn't fit into our program. We had to make some changes. It was a very tough year. The next year, we brought in three young freshmen, and I think we kept, you know, there's 7 of the 10 that were left after the first year or something. And the next year, we went from last in the Big Ten. So my second year coaching, we went from last the first year to runner-up, had a chance to win. And we were leading the national championship after one round. And I remember, look, I was hooked. I was like, man, this is so cool to see the excitement on these kids' eyes and the feeling they had. They didn't have much success. They didn't have any expectations. But to go and to play at this level and to have the success, it warmed my heart so much. It was really cool to see pride brought to our program and people excited about it. I knew I'd done the right thing. And, you know, it's been a pretty good run since. We've had a couple other years, down years, but for the last 15 or 16 or 16 years, 17 years, we haven't had a down year yet. You know, we've been in the top 10 consistently for a long time. I think we hold the record in the longest ranked number one team in the coaches poll during that time. So, I think I made the right decision when I did that, because it's deep, it's inherent. It's just not a job, it's a lifestyle. I don't feel like I work, if that makes sense. So yeah, I think that time, though, the second year I was coaching, to see the thing change and to see the success, like, man, these kids really enjoy this stuff. And if the kids are enjoying it, I'll keep doing it. If they don't enjoy it or they don't want to win, then I'll get out.
By the way, do you think you ever would have taken a head coaching job at a men's program other than your alma mater at Illinois?
That's a great question. And no, I would not have. I would have still played if Illinois hadn't come back, or if honestly, if I would have had been an assistant coach somewhere and work into it, I wouldn't have done it either. But to have the opportunity to come back and be in the Big Ten at my alma mater, Illinois, and build a program that I was a part of, I was very lucky. I came at the right time. The AD believed in me. Obviously, they knew me from my time playing there and things in my history. But no, I would not have gone and coached anywhere else at that time. It was just too perfect for me to do that. My wife's a graduate of Illinois, so she got to go back home, and it just made a lot of sense. And honestly, you know, I very easily could have gone back for a year or two and not liked it and then gone back on playing on tour. I don't know. But my life is a lot more full now, because being a PGA Tour player, you have very few really good friends and very friends. You're out there competing with your friends every week. You're on the road all the time. Being at Illinois, my life has gotten so much wider and bigger because of all the people and all the support and all the people I've met and the coaching my guys and the relationships with my past players, current players, and future players has broadened my life. Where if you're a tour player, it's an awesome life. I lived it for a long time, but it's very solitary. It's very in your own little world. It's your game every day. It's very narrow for me. And I think my life has gotten better because I've widened it up through coaching.
Fabulous response. Coach, final question for me. It's one that I close with all of our interviews. And it's if you could have three people in your life, and it could be family members, it could be well-known individuals as far as golfers, three people, whether living or deceased, who would maybe round out a dream foursome for you, Mike, who would those three be, and where would you play that kind of very special round of golf?
Well, I tell you what, you think about that a lot. You hear that question, and it's something that's kind of neat to think about. And I have so much respect for the players that played the game before I was alive and didn't understand how the game, how they thought, you know, the Bobby Jones or the Gene Sarazens from the PGA and all that stuff. And the Sam Snead, that'd be cool to see those guys. So that's part of me says that, but then also you have your connections with your family. You know, my grandfather was a big golfer, and I never really played golf that much. He passed away before I really got into the game. So that meant something to do to just to spend time with him, and then obviously my dad, my kids. That'd be fun to do that too. So I have a lot of people I'd like to do it with, and that'd all be a dream. It'd just be in different days of the week. How's that? I'll take
Or we'll give you nine hole. How about we give you the front nine with your family, and the back nine with Mr. Jones and Mr. Sarazen and Sweet Swing and Sam.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome, and that would satisfy a lot of things for me right there.
Coach, this has been terrific. Wishing you the very best as the 2025-26 campaign begins. And I know you're going to have a lot of success in developing kids, and I know the expectations are high. All the best going into the new season. Really appreciate you joining us.
Kelly, thanks a lot. And that's where the fun is, man. Development. That's where it's fun.
Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William and Harry's limited edition Spirit Shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup and to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% water resistant, and all-day comfort from tee to green and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Rebuy now at WilliamAndHarry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort. Well, again, as I said going into that interview, and maybe you all have someone who jumps to mind who's been this incredible combination of great player at both the collegiate and professional level as Mike Small, and has had the success. I'm not sure that individual is out there. Would love to hear from you if you know of somebody. Thank you, Coach Small. That was great. Wishing you the very best of luck in the coming season. He's got a good team again. He's got a couple of international players, and they will be the force once again. I know Coach Small really wants to get that NCAA team championship. They've been close. We'll see what the 2025-26 campaign brings. Okay, Keegan Bradley. He's really been grappling, and I understand why. This has been a rare situation since Mr. Palmer in 1963. No one has been a playing captain for either side in the Ryder Cup. Keegan Bradley clearly has played well enough to merit picking himself, and I believe he will. I also believe that what I heard from Rich Lerner last week makes a lot of sense, and that is Keegan is not going to, if he picks himself, Keegan would not play in every match. Otherwise, he would just be a player. It would almost like he would be forfeiting his captaincy. I could see where Keegan would play in the afternoon on the first day, Friday, and then the afternoon, the second day on Saturday, and then play in the singles match on Sunday. That way he can have a feel for what's going on Friday morning and get his pairings in for the matches that afternoon. Same thing would apply on Saturday. I think he's going to pick himself. I think it would almost be at this point disappointing to him, to the PGA of America that went out on a limb and kind of had this idea. Well, wouldn't it be cool maybe if our captain played? And I think it'd be disappointing to his fellow guys, two of them last week, but Morikawa, and I can't remember who else, but mentioned that, yeah, he's played really well. I'd love to see him on the team. Rory McIlroy has made it clear that now I think it's too big of a job. I don't think he's really kind of throwing any shade necessarily at Keegan. I think he's just being honest. He was asked to do the same, and he said no. My pick's in addition. Colin Morikawa, I know he's not playing great, but he's a Ryder Cup guy. I think makes a lot of sense with a lot of experience. Justin Thomas has been playing well, merits it. Ben Griffin, rookie, yes, but Ben Griffin has won twice this year, one in the Zurich Team Championship and also a regular tour event on his own. Cameron Young. Ironically, I ran into Cameron Young earlier today at a Costco here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Seems like a nice guy, rather quiet, and I congratulated him on his play. I said, have you heard anything from the captain? He said no, although I did notice he was checking his phone as he was just before I went up and introduced myself. But I expect it'll be him. So I Keegan Bradley, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Ben Griffin, Cameron Young, and then the fifth guy or the sixth guy is a guy that I've really, really struggled to get to like. And I think it's a guy who a lot of people really struggle to get to like. But the fact is, Patrick Cantlay is a really good player. And I struggled to get to like him for lots of obvious reasons. He's absurdly slow, as you saw in the Tour Championship. A lot of times when you see these guys and they cut to them for a shot or a putt, you're seeing them right as they're about to hit a shot or a putt. Well, with Cantlay playing in the same group, the same pairing with Tommy Fleetwood, you saw how long it took him to hit a you-know-what putt. And the little three-finger thing that he does when he acknowledges the crowd, I just think there's everything unlikable about a tour player in Patrick Cantlay. And on top of that, Patrick Cantlay had a lot to do with the PGA of America making the decision to essentially pay each of the American players $200,000 for what they call a stipend to be part of the team this year. He refused, he'll say differently, but he refused to wear the team hat 2 years ago. I all I can say is Patrick Cantlay, if he's picked, he better just shut up, go out and play and win every time. Because a lot of it could come back on him. He could come out of that as being an American hero, or it could come out with a lot of people really down on Patrick Cantlay. A lot of people are really, really up on Tommy Fleetwood, and for really good reasons. What a likable guy. What a piece of as you'll hear from him, talk about perseverance. Spent a little time with our executive producer, Janice Self, before we recorded this, and she brought out a lot of good points. Janice, very good player herself. She knows the game. She spent a lot of time in the UK, so she kind of understands the mentality over there. And we talked about the difference between Rory winning earlier this year at the Masters, that was everything, that Rory McIlroy had to win the Masters. It's all that he had heard for 10 years. It was almost like anything else he might have done, fine, you won this master, you were part of the Ryder Cup winning team. But until he finally got there, he could finally exhale. Tommy Fleetwood, and both Fleetwood and Rory, working with renowned psychologist Bob Rotella, who's been on our show. On the other side, Tommy Fleetwood has a different mentality altogether. He just strives. He doesn't let the demons, if you will, of not winning drag him down. And you hear him say that. I just want to have the opportunity to be there again. I enjoy the opportunity of being in the mix. We'll see how it goes. It's not an end. It's not everything if I don't win. It's do or die if I don't win. And he's not just thinking about if I could just win once. He wants to win a lot, as do all of those guys. But he's put his mind in a position. It's a very healthy place to play. Enjoy the game. And I think for Rotella as well, he accentuates that. In other words, look, Tommy, you're playing good golf. Just keep going at it. Think about the positives. Think about all the good shots that you're hitting. Don't labor over the couple of holes that went awry. And I think there's so much to be said for the success that he's had of late. He's played extremely well. Now he's gotten over the mountaintop, but it's not the end all and be all for Tommy Fleetwood. This is maybe just the beginning. Now it's okay. We're going to continue to be there. And if I win, fine. If I don't win, I'm not going to go home and pout and struggle with life. It's not that important. It's important, but it's not the end all or be all. And all that said about Tommy Fleetwood from my perspective, and from Janice Self's perspective, let's hear what Tommy Fleetwood had to say after he won the Tour Championship. This is a long cut. Stay with it. It's really good.
If you look at what the best players do and try and copy it, whether you're as good as them or not, is a different story. But if you watch what they do and you copy as much there as possible, I think that's a good way to go. And I think the guys that win the most, they're in contention so much. They're up there all the time. And that's where I want to be. I want to be up there, and it's taken me a while to get this done, like to get this first win. And I've never I've never looked at it as just trying to win once. I've always had the mindset that I want to win multiple. I want to win plenty. It's just that first one seems to have taken a long time. The next one might take a long time. I don't know. But I've always had the mindset that I just want to be one of the best players in the world. I want to keep putting myself in contention. And yeah, I always felt like it would probably happen. It was just a story of perseverance and continuing to try and put myself in those positions. I think the easiest thing to do is when it doesn't go your way is to sulk a little bit or let it affect you for a while and then get back to it. You know, use excuses if you like. But I said every single time that it didn't happen for me or where I'd let one go or where someone beat me. I just want to get there again. I just want to give myself another chance. And like I say, it's almost easy to say now, like I'm really pleased that it's happened now. But if it didn't happen today, I would have said the same things. I would have said, I just want another chance. I'm just going to go back and work and I'm just going to go again. And I think I've had the opportunity to prove that, that if you just keep going, it can happen. So I guess that's my story.
It's a great story. It's a fabulous story. What a stand-up guy. There may not be a more stand-up guy in golf right now than Tommy Fleetwood. And he's going to be part of a European team next month, the Ryder Cup, that frankly is going to be tough to beat. Speaking of, as the calendar turns to September and it begins the countdown within just a few weeks, starting next week, of the Ryder Cup itself. It's a Ryder Cup month for Musings on Golf. We start out with my good friend Hank Gola, a longtime golf writer for both the New York Daily News and New York Post. He's out with a fabulous book called Ryder Cup Rivals, The Fiercest Battles for Golf's Holy Grail. Hank picks out about 13 different Ryder Cups and focuses on the significance of those. Great book, and already had a great interview with Hank. Following week is Rich Beem, who won the PGA Championship and has been on the team for Sky Sports over in the UK for a long time and will be covering the Ryder Cup. Following week, we have Bones McKay, Phil Mickelson's longtime caddy, and will be following the play very closely for NBC Sports during the week of the Ryder Cup. Keeping my fingers crossed on a couple of other guests, and we'll certainly let you know if it all comes to fruition. Enjoy the Labor Day weekend. Get out, play some golf. Particularly those of you who've worked so hard in your career, past, present. Get away from work. Have some fun. Celebrate with family. Make a birdie or two. And thanks again for joining me and Janice on Musings on Golf.